Hi, welcome to Romance Happy Hour. I'm Dylan Crush.
And I'm Dawn Ludeke.
We're bringing you your favorite romance authors.
You'll get to hear them read from their books and answer your questions.
Now let's get on with the show. Hey, welcome to Romance Happy Hour. I'm Dylan Crush, and I am here with Dawn Ludeke, my co-hostess. And tonight we have guests, Dari McCoy and Madeline Lane. So we're super excited to have everybody with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes. Great to be here.
Yeah, really excited to be here.
So, I think, Dawn.
I'm just going to say, Dylan, real quick, I think we worked on this Instagram thing because I just got a pop-up that says, Romance Happy Hour is live. So,
yay.
On Instagram. So, yay.
Good. There's a first time. For everything. We have finally figured out how to get it to go live on Instagram.
Yeah.
So Dawn, give us a quick recap over the past 2 weeks. It doesn't seem possible that it was 2 weeks ago that we saw each other because it feels like it was 2 days ago. I don't know. Time is like flying now. But what have you been up to?
Real estate.
Thought we were going to pry you out of that career. And,
We're trying so hard. Like I said the other day. Real estate's like a cult. Once you get in, you almost can't get out. It kind of is. And they just,
Come back to the light, Dawn. Come back
I'm
to the
trying.
Light.
I'm trying really hard.
Just, so no
other
writing?
Than that, no, I still got that book I have to work on for my agent. So I'm trying to, but I just don't have any inspiration because my brain is just fried by the time I get done with everything else. Mm-hmm. So.
I know. I have mad respect for writers who work a full-time job and then still find any amount of brain power to come home and write fiction.
And with family and all of
that. Yes. It's amazing. So, yeah.
And then I've had these like sleepless nights lately because I'm just stressed about real estate, right? I'll wake up at 2:30 in the morning and I'll be like, there are some authors who are up writing right now and they're just like all perky. And like, I can't remember who it was. She's one of the Latina authors that we have, but she was doing this like conference and she was like, oh, I get up and I'm like dancing. She does like, she's saying she'll like just start writing and dancing. She's got a standing desk and it's like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. And I'm like sitting on my couch with a cup of coffee going, F today. There's no way I'm dancing right now, let alone writing. So,
you know, I think that's the minority of people that are up at 2 o'clock in the morning dancing and writing. I mean, I don't know, but from the people I know, it seems like that would be the minority.
What time are they going to bed?
I know.
Right. 3 in the morning.
I'm sleeping. At 2 and 3 in the morning, I'm sleeping or something is seriously wrong.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yep. So don't feel bad about that, Dawn. We'll get you back.
Okay,
sooner or later. We'll get you back.
All right, Dylan, what about you?
I've been working on, I have a couple projects with deadlines coming up. The next book in the Mustang Mountain Riders comes out May 15th. So I'm putting the finishing touches on that. And then I've got a story in an anthology for rock and romance readers that I will be attending in August. And so that is due super soon. So yeah, I've got a couple things going on there.
Fun. Yeah.
But we are here tonight with two. Have either one of you been on here before? Oh my God, it's been like 5 years and I can't remember. I was thinking you're both new to Romance Happy Hour. So yay, we've got two brand new guests tonight. So why don't you go ahead, introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about what you write and what you have been working on lately. And since you're reading first tonight, Dari, let's have you go first.
So hello, for those who don't know me, I am Dari McCoy. I'm still sort of a baby author. I've only released my first book November of 2021.
Yay!
So we've been going pretty strong since then. Mm-hmm. I write romance, primarily interracial, but subgenres. I'm all over the place. I write romantic suspense, contemporary, fantasy, paranormal, sports romance. Right. I'm not going to limit myself and say that will be where it ends because I said I wasn't writing fantasy and I had a fantasy book come out in February. So you do not tempt the people that live in your head.
I love that.
It's true.
Yeah, So I am an avid reader before I started writing, and I am enjoying my writing journey. I'm writing full time right now. Hopefully that continues. So I'm it's just living the dream, because I get up every morning and I have my breakfast and I get on my feed with my writing partner and we write all day.
And so you are not one of those that are up at 2 o'clock in the morning writing, no. Unless you're probably on a deadline.
I am not. Even when I'm on a deadline, I'm asleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I might stay up to midnight, but at 2, I am out like a light, because I am not a friendly person if I don't get sleep.
I'm not a friendly person if I don't get coffee. I mean, my husband, like, he's learned that the hard way this last couple weeks, where I've been like up at 2 a.m. because he'll be like, you know, trying to be all sweet and nice in the morning. And I'm like, if you don't stay away from me, I know you're trying to be nice. You want to hug me? Okay. Hug me after coffee. I'm mean.
We need you. We need to make you a t-shirt or something, Dawn, that says nothing until coffee.
Yes.
Something like that.
I don't actually drink coffee. So that is, I somehow managed not to grab that particular thing to help me get going. So I just raw dog the day. I just get
oh,
up.
Oh my word.
I have my cup of echinacea tea and go on about my business.
You just made my heart sink to my stomach when saying you don't drink coffee. I don't know how I could function without it. Mad props to you.
I mean, it wasn't on purpose. I just don't like the taste. I love the smell, but I don't like the taste.
So. Well, when you fill it, you like it.
Mm-hmm. When you fill it with, you know, like vanilla creamer, then
that's what
you
it
have
is.
A little bit of coffee with your creamer. It takes on a whole different flavor.
It takes on an even better flavor when you add Bailey's Irish
cream. Oh, Bailey's Irish cream, yes.
Like, but I only do that at Christmas.
So. Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
I had that in hot chocolate and it works well.
So. I mean, this is romance happy hour. So yeah, we do like to talk about our cocktails.
So, and what am I working on? Like I said, I just had a fantasy book release in February. That is, I missed my book. I sold out of those. That is this one, The Glassmaker's Helper.
Oh.
It's part of the Getaway Chronicles that I wrote with the ladies that I go on a writing retreat with once a year. We keep trying to get Dylan to come, but she hasn't made it yet.
I don't think I was invited to the last one. You guys have given up on me completely.
And this is my release that comes out. And this is the book I'll be reading from, Tangled Reverence. It comes out next Thursday, May 2nd. It is a part of the Preacher's Kid series. And that's just me and 7 other authors are writing kind of within the same world. However, this is not a Christian romance.
All right.
This is not a Christian
romance. You have to be clear on that.
We love it. I love Christians.
Yes.
But this is not Sweet and Clean. So, and then.
Yeah, it's good not to get that confused.
Very much. I'm trying to help people, because the pearls will be clutched if you went into this thinking, oh, a sweet little read about preacher's kids. Don't do that. Don't do it to yourself.
All right. Well, we are eager to hear you read from that book later. In the meantime, Madeline, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
So I live on the west coast of Canada. I've been writing or published, I guess, since about 2017 in a couple of different pen names. So Madeline Lane is my current pen name, and loving it. This is the book I'll be reading from today. So this is paranormal. Sorry, let's get this.
Everything's opposite. Yeah. I know. It's
This is a paranormal romance. The book is titled Wolf's Kiss. And I started within the romance genre for both of my subgenres, but went quite different historical, Scottish historical romance for one. And so I used a new pen name for the paranormal fantasy romance for these that I'm doing. I grew up reading romance. My mom always read Harlequin romances, you know, the Presents. That was what we always had all over our house. And quite young, I sort of picked it up. And first, just looking at the covers, I can remember this would have been back in the 70s, looking at the covers and just loving those round little circles on the book and the picture of the hero and heroine. And so I started reading those fairly young, maybe 11. And maybe a little bit older, and just loved them. And so that was what I read a lot of, that and fantasy as I was growing up. And tried my hand at some contemporary. I do have some contemporary books out, but discovered historical romances first. Mm-hmm. Julie Garwood, I loved her. And then at a certain point, I found when paranormal really started getting hot, I found Christine Feehan. If you guys remember her, she's still writing. She's quite a prolific writer. And so that was I remember one of her vampire books was one of the first paranormal romances I ever read. And I just loved it. So that's what, there aren't any vampires in my books. I actually don't ever read vampires now, but I mean, I love animals. I love dogs. So the wolves were always big winners for me. And that's it, really. I'm a mom. I've got a couple of twin preteens, so that's always fun. We at a dance competition last weekend, my first time doing that with my daughter, putting on stage makeup for her. That was a new experience. I'm mostly home writing. I have that privilege and doing other things as well, but mostly writing. That's it. And I do drink coffee. Wish I could drink more. I've been restricted. They keep telling me, do not drink coffee. But how do you stop? Like, that's what I'm saying. Do not start if you don't drink, because it's hard. Really hard to stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's hard. Yeah. Tea. You could switch to tea.
Well, yeah. Tea still has stuff in it that they say you shouldn't be drinking that. But it's that moment in the morning where you just, I can't wait for it. I also wait to have my coffee. I wait 2 hours, an hour and a half to 2 hours before I drink it. And so there's that anticipation that builds up before I finally have that one cup of coffee I'm allowing myself to have. And I put stevia in. I put real cream in there, coffee cream. So it is delicious.
Yes. Yeah, I have to have it right away. I mean, I'm right away, like, don't talk to me.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty excited, Dylan. Did you see we have a few Canadians here today?
We do. Yes.
I'm excited about Linda is our favorite Canadian reader. She's here. She's one of our regulars. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to butcher this name. I'm sorry in advance, but Nikoyan.
Nikoyan. You actually said it.
Yay.
We write together every day. So.
Yay. Canadian as well. So welcome.
Yeah, the Canadians are represented tonight.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, as always, if you have questions for our featured authors tonight, pop them in the comments and we will get around to those.
Yeah.
We're going to start off hearing from Dari. So do you have a setup for us, or are you starting from page one?
I am starting from page one, because if I start anywhere else, I'll have to do too many bleeps and redacted.
Oh, yeah.
So we are starting with the prologue. And well, I will tell you, this is a kind of enemies to lovers, but she thinks he's her enemy. He's not really. She's the pastor of the church. He is the president of the church board. And
okay.
And end up in a slightly compromising situation. So.
All right. Well, we will let you get to it and we will join you after you're done.
Okay. Pastor Tara Cox stood behind the lectern in the pulpit of the church she dearly loved, allowing her gaze to travel over the assembled members of the congregation. Her message this Sunday was designed to convict, but also remind the membership of their first duty as believers, being helpers. So she preached from the gospel according to Matthew, specifically on the topic surrounding why Jesus entered the temple, turned over tables, evicting the money changers and all others who were doing business inside. When her eyes landed on Cyrus Lauder, she noticed the firm set of his jaw beneath his neatly trimmed beard. Even if she hadn't, the rigidity in his shoulders as he sat ramrod straight in the pew was hard to miss. Unlike some of the parishioners who were visibly squirming, he was stock still. No, he wasn't comfortable. He was angry. His cognac-colored eyes appeared darker as they flashed with his discontent. Good. It was no more than he deserved for what he pulled on with the board, luring the majority of votes to his side in favor of selling the property she wanted to renovate to further their community outreach. Smugness was unbecoming, but Atara felt it welling inside her as she regarded the results of her convicting sermon. It was one which would have made her daddy proud. That is, if he was still speaking to her after her refusal to give up on being the pastor of her own church to settle for being a first lady and head of the deaconess board. Shaking away the unpleasant thought, Atara wrapped up as normal before going to her position at the door to shake hands as people exited the church. She was feeling pretty good about herself when she entered her office to remove her robe and gather her things to leave. There weren't any other activities planned for the day, so she was looking forward to stopping by her cousin's house for Sunday dinner. Iva had sent her a message saying she was cooking Atara's favorite. Pork chops smothered in gravy, cabbage, sweet corn with cornbread sounded so amazing her stomach rumbled in anticipation. As she turned from placing her robe into the closet, her breath caught in her throat. Cyrus stood framed in her doorway. His nostrils flared with his deep inhale as he stepped over the threshold, closing the door behind him. Lifting one eyebrow, Tara closed the closet door and stood in front of it with her arms folded, waiting. Just what was that all about? Cyrus's normally deep voice sounded like someone had scraped sandpaper over his vocal cords. Good afternoon to you too, Mr. Louder. Unfolding her arms, Atara crossed the room to her desk. Her reference to him as Mr. instead of brother was purposeful. I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about. You know, cutting off the likely curse, Cyrus squared his shoulders and lowered his voice. You know exactly what I'm talking about. It was no coincidence you decided to teach that particular lesson today after what happened with the Lloyd property this past week. You did it just to goad me. Sniffing, Atara reached into the left-hand bottom drawer of the desk to remove her purse. Even after no longer working in the corporate world, she wasn't able to break the habit of storing it there. I know it's hard for you to believe, but I don't structure my sermons around you. I wouldn't deign to try to diminish your importance, but everything isn't about you, Cyrus Lauder. It was good the Lord didn't see fit to strike people down for lying on church grounds, because she would have had a lightning bolt to the ass for that one. It's funny you should call it a lesson rather than a sermon, though. Is it because you actually learned something today? Could it be you now understand the concept of ministry? Looking down at her purse, she dug inside to locate her keys. She had no intention of entertaining him a moment longer. President of the church board or not, he didn't get to just show up in her office trying to chastise her about what she preached. Warmth hit her back before she was whipped around by Cyrus's hold on her upper arm. Excuse you? I know you didn't just put your hands on me. Atara really wished the heat flooding her body could be totally attributed to anger. But it would be as big a lie as when she told Cyrus her sermon wasn't aimed at him. His light brown eyes were shooting daggers. However, she held his gaze with fire in her own. Removing his hand from her arm as if direct contact with her skin burned him, Cyrus leaned close to her. He was no longer physically holding on to her, but his big body kept her trapped between him and the sturdy wooden desk. Don't do that. When he finally spoke, he didn't bother to address his handsy behavior. Atara's frown was pointed as she returned his glare. Don't do what? And is it necessary for you to be this close to me? You never treat a male pastor this way. I wouldn't have to explain to a male pastor why he shouldn't throw money at a derelict building. He would understand how fiscally irresponsible it is to use the church funds for that way. Atara's jaw dropped. The nerve of this Neanderthal, this pompous misogynist. Putting a hand up, she pressed against his chest, trying to create space between them. You know what? You're completely out of line, not to mention rude. I'm not having this discussion with you. I said what needed to be said at the meeting. If you can't handle a mirror being held up to your actions, maybe pray about it or seek therapy. Either way, this conversation is over. Ignoring her bid for space, Cyrus maintained his posture. Initially, Atara was irritated. After all, they bumped heads regularly. But he was taking things too far this time. Pressing both hands to his chest, she used more strength to shove him back. He didn't move, not an inch. However, what did happen was her hands were trapped beneath his, right before his lips came crashing down on hers. What the hell? Her shock was swiftly eclipsed by the heat blazing beneath her skin. He tasted better than she'd imagined. Even though she regretted it afterwards, she'd had more than one fantasy about Cyrus Lauder and the possible talents he had with the tongue currently tangling with hers. Oh, Pastor, Brother Lauder, oh my. Celia's jumbled words trailed off as Cyrus snatched away from Atara. Atar's fingers were still aloft as he backed away. The separation was so swift she nearly toppled over because she hadn't realized she'd begun to lean on him during their kiss. In the split second it took her to fully comprehend what happened, Celia had already turned away. The slamming door was like a bucket of ice water being poured over Atara's head. What has she done? I think I still have some time, so I'll keep going. Cyrus, chapter one. Cyrus stood looking at his reflection in the mirror at the estate he'd secured for the day's activities. His bespoke tuxedo was cut to perfection. The insinuation that he wouldn't be able to get what he wanted in such a short time frame was laughable. As his grandfather had taught him in more ways than one, money talks. So he was dressed to marry his bride in the suit he'd chosen from the local designer who'd been making big waves, providing menswear for athletes, actors, and society elite. The man had even showed up to make any last-minute alterations that may have been necessary. Do you plan to stand there staring at yourself for the rest of the day, or are we going outside? Cyrus looked over his shoulder at his brother, Caleb. Wearing an almost identical suit, his brother stood next to the full-length mirror with his shoulder propped against one wall. Stand up straight, Caleb. You'll ruin the lines of the suit. And no, I don't plan to simply stare at myself. We'll go out when it's time. Are you hiding from your future wife? Identical cognac-colored eyes met his when Cyrus shot his brother a glare. He neither confirmed nor denied his brother's taunting words. As his younger sibling was the only member of his family present, he didn't punch him in the face for implying he would want to hide from his bride. Instead, Cyrus simply stared at him until Caleb did as he directed and stood up straight. Tugging on his cuffs, then the bottom of his suit jacket, Caleb's lips tilted up on one side. Happy now? All straightened out. No damage. As he walked away, Cyrus heard him mumbling about the suit not being a rental, and he could do what he wanted with his own property. Cyrus wouldn't allow himself to be goaded, though. Doing that was what got him into this situation to begin with. 4 months earlier. The second Cyrus heard Celia's voice, he knew whatever happened next wouldn't be good. As much as he didn't want to, he pulled away from Atara. Despite popular opinion, he did respect her position as pastor, but in his head and heart, he didn't call her by the title because it put more distance between them. Distance that had been there for them to continue to function in their roles at Harmony Haven. He couldn't stop himself from gathering her in his arms again when she nearly toppled over after he abruptly released her. Celia was already on her way out of the door, so she didn't see it. But it wouldn't matter. The damage had been done. He, more than anyone, knew how quickly the information would go from the secretary's lips to the ears of the church leadership. Expletive. The stricken expression covering Atara's face was confirmation of her awareness of the cluster they now found themselves in. The two of them together in a non-platonic capacity was a conflict of interest. For people in their position, the only way for a relationship to happen was for one of them to step down from their role. There was no way on this side of heaven Atara would walk away from being pastor, not after essentially being disowned by her parents for yielding to her calling. For different reasons, he couldn't vacate his position as president of the church board. It was his business savvy which allowed them to afford the hefty salaries of not just the pastor, but the other paid positions within Harmony Haven. They could possibly manage without him. However, standing on the sidelines wasn't exactly his strong suit. So what were they to do? By the time Celia was done, the congregation would likely believe he'd followed through on the desire he'd acted on and had Atara's dress nearly ripped from her body. You do realize she's going to tell everyone she crosses paths with what she just saw. We both know Celia plays fast and loose with the details. Atara's head dropped for a second before she looked back up at him. I know. We've had more than one conversation about it. I was on the verge of reassigning her, but I probably won't be able to do that now. Catching herself, she cut the word off before she cursed. When she started again, she inserted a replacement word for the one it was obvious she wanted to say. Heck, I'll be lucky to have a job this time next week. Rubbing her arm, Cyrus shook his head. Uh-uh, don't do that. They'd run me off before they asked you to step down. More than half the congregation would have left if you left. The assurance fell from his lips easily because they were true. The membership hung on Atara's every word. Her acceptance of each person, no matter what, had endeared her to the diverse congregation of their non-denominational church. No matter how often they were at odds about the correct way to manage the church, when it came to properties and expenditures, he couldn't withhold what he knew to be true. Her dark chocolate eyes regarded him with wonder for a moment. They darted away once she realized their current position, with her being encircled by his arms. This time, when she pressed against his chest in a bid to gain more space, he actually moved. Placing slightly more than an arm's length between them, he stared at her. He didn't like the way her shoulders slumped, nor the dejection in her expression. They'd both grown up in the church with pastors for fathers, although different denominations. And while Harmony Haven had broken away from many of the traditional Christian church norms, some things they held fast to. Their very single pastor being caught in a lover's embrace with a member of the church board would blaze through the congregation like a wildfire. The only way to stop it was to get in front of it. I don't want you to worry about this. I'll handle it. Go on about your day as you planned. I'll call you tomorrow. Unlike the numerous times when he decisively stated his stance or opinions to her, Atara didn't argue or push back in the slightest. Almost in a day, she picked up her purse, grabbed her overcoat from the hook next to the door, and walked out of the office. She didn't even bother to make him leave so she could lock the door behind her. And I think I will stop. Oh, I think I'll stop there. I think that's time, right?
Yeah, no, that was great.
Okay, thanks.
And now you've got us hooked. Who in the world is he marrying? that was a dirty trick there, Dari.
So, yeah. No, he's marrying her. I can tell you that.
Oh, good.
Spoiler.
Spoiler. I think it's always a spoiler, though. We know it's always an HEA, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was good. Yeah. I mean, as soon as the person, the other person walked in, it was like, uh-oh.
It really would be the gossip of the church that saw them.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
So what inspired you to write this story? You said it's part of a shared world series with some other authors?
Right. It actually started when I went to an event in Canada. And the authors were sitting around, because there were quite a few authors that are actual preacher's kids. And so we were just sitting around kind of talking or whatever. And they were like, you know, we ought to write a series. We ought to write a series about preacher's kids. And I was like, okay, I'm not a preacher's kid, but I'm heavily involved. I was not Cyrus, but close in as far as church involvement goes. So I have that side of it. And just from there, my people showed up, but I also have a really close friend who's married to a pastor. And so I actually called her to talk about church life and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But having met her and then had this conversation with the other pastors, Atara came to life as well as Cyrus, especially with both of them and him having his way that he wants to run things and her having her way that she wants to run things, because their fathers were pastors, and in her father's church, he ran things. And in his father's church, the board ran things.
So definitely inherent conflict, which we always love, because that just amps up the tension and makes the romance all that more delicious.
Right.
So do you have any questions, Dawn, that you want to
do
now before we hear from Madeline?
Linda.
Linda's going deep tonight, right off the bat.
Yeah. What is one rule that you live by? And this is for both of you.
Okay.
One rule. I would say it's try to be kind to people. You never know what's going on in their life, where they're at. Give people grace.
Yep.
That's a good one.
So that reminds me of my favorite quote. All-time favorite quote is a Dr. Seuss. It's from a Dr. Seuss book. It's basically nobody is youier than you. I can't remember now exactly, but it's it's like always be yourself, because only you can be you. Mm-hmm. Can't be anyone else. So that's what I try to be all the time. It's me. Mm-hmm. So
awesome.
Good one too.
Both excellent responses.
What about you, Dylan?
Oh gosh.
You've ever had that
answer this too. I don't know. I mean, I like, you know, be kind. I think it's a quote from an Abby Jimenez book, like grace costs you nothing. So I like that one. I've seen people like posting their tattoos of that quote, you know, where they get it like on their arm and stuff. So that one I think resonates with a lot of people. But I think in today's age, that seems very relevant. Anything about, you know, being kind and understanding other people, live your life with some compassion.
Yeah. And think about where it can get you in life, not just being kind, but giving people the benefit of the doubt, you know, taking that extra moment to actually, where are they coming from? Yep. What's their perspective? And you never know what that will be. And that could change everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. How about you, Dawn? Now you've had the most time to think about it. So your answer better be really good.
So I have. I'm not sure how good it is because I'm going to quote Dory. Just keep swimming. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's like every day. I'm just like, just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. Just keep going. Yep. You got this. Gym. Go to the gym. Go home.
Yeah. I would love for our viewers to post the rule that they would buy, especially you, Linda. Let's turn this back on Linda, because that was Linda went deep right off the bat. So yeah, I would love to see the rules that you live by in the comments.
I love that, Dylan. Challenge.
Oh, I know.
Challenge for the day.
We don't get too carried away with challenges. Usually Dawn is the one who's challenging everybody to everything.
I love challenges. Not, I don't like people challenging me.
Right. Of course not.
I just like to challenge. All right. So we do have another one. If your book was made into a movie, and I'm so excited about this question because I'm always curious about it, who would play your two lead characters?
This book, this one, or any book?
Okay. Any book.
Give us a couple.
Any one of your books.
Yeah.
Any one of my books.
I don't know.
He's not an actor though, but this one, my main character is my physical muse for him. The wrestler. Oh, and why did his name just literally fly out of my head?
While you're thinking of it, though, while you're thinking about it, just put that cover up a little bit higher so we can see that man chest. There we go. Yeah.
Roman Reigns. I knew it was coming. So Roman Reigns would be Rom. And as far as actresses go, there really are not that many plus size actresses for me to pick from. So I would go with Danielle Brooks. For Carlita, although she doesn't quite fit Carlita, but she is voluptuous the way Carlita is, but she's not as tall because Carlita is 6 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So, but he's also like nearly 7 feet tall, so they even out.
That's tall.
But this is a shifter book. He's a bear shifter, so he's supposed to be big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, for sure. I got to say, though, like when I see a really tall guy, especially like it kind of takes my breath away when he comes near me, like really tall.
Just grab your climbing gear. Oh, you're married. Never mind. I'm single. Yeah, I'm climbing
gear. All right. We got one more. Can we do one more? Let's do one more. What inspires you when creating your story plot? Your inspiration. What is your inspiration?
Inspiration. I don't think it's inspiration. Well, I mean, it is inspiration, but it's just pure imagination. And so I think sometimes I don't even know where the ideas come from. You're just, whether you're, I mean, I plot before I write, and I'm creating, getting a whole idea of my story before I go. It changes as I'm writing, but I create quite elaborate outlines ahead of time. And so, I mean, I'll read other books, and that might give me a love of a genre. And then once I have that love of a genre, then I want to get in, start writing those characters. So when I was writing historical romance, Julie Garwood, I read her, and I just loved everything about the books, the tone, the characters, the hilarity between them, the, you know, everything about that tone of the book inspired me to, not to copy, but it resonated with me in a certain way that then I was inspired to create stories like that. With these particular books, my my paranormal romance. I'm going the wrong way again. There we go. There are lots and lots and lots of books out there, you know, that are shifter books. And so I was trying to find something that was a mix, not just shifter, but something else. So, and I was loving Norse mythology. This was before all the Marvel came out, because I actually wrote the books in 2010, and then didn't publish them until probably 12 years later. And so it was that inspiration of just trying to find the pieces that fit together. And then once you have those pieces that are falling into place and you can see it happening, that's the inspiration right there. You just want to keep going, and you're in alignment, I think, with your creative power, your muse, source, God, you know, all that.
Yeah. Mine could be anything. It really could. I could be watching a TikTok and I'll usually shoot the message to somebody so that I have it, and it'll just plot bunny. Is usually like just plot bunny, just a random plot bunny. And just like I said, but this one, when they said preacher's kid, we should write a preacher's kid story. I was like, there are people now in my head, and they argue because he wants things his way, and she wants things her way. So it really could be anything. Just like with the one I just showed you with the shifter. I was watching television and talking to my sister, and suddenly had this idea of what if everything you touched, if you truly desire for it to prosper, it would prosper. And that's how Carlita came to be, because that's her gift. If she wants things to prosper, all she has to do is really want it and touch it, and it will prosper.
Hmm. Nice. Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds like a really useful gift.
It is very useful. She can make things grow and heal people. She can do all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, should we get to the next?
We never heard Madeline's actor and actress.
Yes, I didn't have an actress, but I would always say for all of my books, I would say Henry Cavill. Hands down, if I could get that man to play any character, I'd be very, very, very happy.
Yep.
Not only is he beautiful, but he just is such a great actor, and I really enjoy him. Love The Witcher. Mm-hmm. Love everything he does. And I won't even dip into who I would want for the female lead. I don't know. Do you guys have ideas? Who would you have?
Oh, I don't know. We haven't heard you read from your book yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hear you read. And then maybe while you're reading, our viewers will pop in there who they envision in their head, like actress-wise.
All right. Good idea.
So I'll prep this by saying Wolf's Kiss is sort of a mashup between wolf shifters and Norse mythology. I mentioned that earlier. And we won't see them in this particular section I'm going to read, but there are appearances by the different Norse gods. I think Loki's at the very end, and Odin plays a very small role, and Freya is in there. And it's quite on a big scale and mythological. And so there's lots of pieces that I've read, the Norse myths, and I've tried to sort of pull pieces in. It's based sort of around Ragnarok, as that's, if you guys know anything about Norse mythology, Ragnarok comes to pass when Fenrir kills Odin. And so the gods have, and this is in the mythology, the gods have imprisoned Fenrir, and he has two twin sons who are the sun and the moon, and they're called Hati and Skull. And that's all in the mythology. And so I took that idea and I made my villains in the book. They are Hati and Skull. And so our heroes are here, basically the they're wolves. They're created by Odin to guard Fenrir, keep him away, keep him in prison so he can't bring on Ragnarok. And his sons, Fenrir's sons, are always trying to release him. So that's sort of the bigger picture of what's going on. Other than that, these are, you know, mostly found family stories, talking a lot about creation myths. And this one in particular, Wolf's Kiss, best friends, little sister, also friends to lovers. They've known each other sort of all their lives. And she's a dancer. He's a warrior. I will be saying a lot of words that you won't have any idea what they mean. It's just that within the story, I've taken words from Norse mythology and sort of created my own language for certain things as I'm creating the world, the fantasy world of the Varda. And it's set in Missoula, Montana.
Oh, really? That's where I live. Yeah. Well, kind of. Just a little bit.
Close by. Everything's relative in Montana. Right?
Everything's relative.
So a minute over, I told you that I shouldn't be too long. And we actually don't have Robbie in the scene. He's my main character until a few pages in, because she's having a conversation to begin with one of her friends. It's a whole found family thing. And her brother, who annoys the crap out of her. So there may be a few words you don't get, but they're discussing sort of the Christmas, the you know, of their, it's not during Christmas, but it's called Husel. That's one of the words. But anyway, let's just go.
Okay. And are you starting from chapter one, just to give people
I didn't even think about that, but that was a great idea when
Oh, no, that's okay. Which is just to kind of give us a sense of where we are in the story. Okay.
They are set in a, they're in a nightclub.
Okay.
That is, you know, it's everybody is in the nightclub, but they have an area, a lounge that is very specific. Only the Valdir can be there. And so she's in a discussion with her brother and her best friend. And down below is the nightclub and the music. And it's a place where the pack hangs out when they're in Missoula. But their actual pack where they live as a pack is up in the mountains. And it's a big compound up there.
All right. We will see you when you are done.
Okay. I stilled as I realized what I'd said, and a thrill shot through me. Once my wolf rose. She was inside me, and I was inside her. I'd communicated with her. All those years of feeling unwanted and somehow less than began to fade. My wolf was with me. Maybe she hadn't been ready to come out yet because I hadn't been ready. But now, just knowing that she was there and that either way, accepted by Odin or not, we'd be moving into our future together, made me feel less afraid. My mother had always said, and now I understood, that I would never be alone once my wolf became a part of me and I became a part of her. Odin may not want me, the Varda may not want me, but my wolf would always be by my side. Tyr tipped back his drink, finished it, and then shot me a look. Are you ready to go? Go where? I asked. But I had a good idea what he was talking about, and my shoulders and jaw tightened in anticipation of the fight I knew was coming. Home. Tomorrow's Husel. He gave me that, you're such an idiot look, and I almost growled, even though my wolf had completely disappeared. Husel was our biggest holiday and celebrated Odin's creation of the Valdir and the sacrifice made by his favorite wolf pack so the Valdir could be born, bursting fully grown from the wolves' bodies and killing them in the process. Hence the sacrifice. Mom's been working like a dog to get the house decorated, Tyr continued, and Dad's been elbow deep in meat and blood, making the sausages and preparing the organ meats and venison pies for the feast. The kitchen looks like a crime scene. My mouth watered as I thought about the traditional blood sausage, deer pies, and the marinated meats that were central to the traditional Husel feast, and the rice pudding with cranberry sauce for dessert. Yum. Although if I thought about what the dessert represented and what it actually consisted of back in the days of the first pack, I wouldn't be able to eat it. Legend said that Odin killed an evil Jotuness, who was both witch and wolf, mixed her blood with his semen, and fed the concoction to his wolves, basically impregnating them. When the first Valdir were born, they burst from the wolf's stomach fully grown, killing their host in the process. Nice. Did Dad make Smalahav like he's been threatening all year to do? I shuddered at the thought. Maybe once my wolf rose, I would like the dish better. But right now, the idea of staring at a cooked sheep's head on my plate beside my cauliflower, potato dumplings, and tomato salad made me gag. I'd had to endure it a few times as a child when my grandmother visited, and it had horrified me. Tyr, on the other hand, had chowed down. No, but the house looks like a barber pole with all the red and white. Mom's going all out. She wants to make this the best Husel ever. You have to be there. Red and white. Blood and semen, so primal and mythological and so gross. It's not that I didn't want to celebrate with my pack and family, although for years I had dreaded the holidays, especially when the curse was still poisoning the pack. It's just that I had a rehearsal tomorrow morning that I couldn't miss, and ever since I'd been stranded in that snowstorm when I was a teenager, I'd been afraid to drive the mountain road if there was even a hint of snow. Not that I could tell Tyr that. It would be another weapon in his arsenal against me. Sad, really, that my relationship with my brother had become so contentious. Or had it always been that way? We'd certainly fought a lot growing up, and I remember being afraid of him sometimes when the curse still infested the pack, and of my parents too. They could be volatile and unpredictable. I'd learned to tread carefully, to read the room and the energy. When I found myself in a tense situation with my family or other pack members, I would close my eyes and breathe deeply, ask Freya to spread love in the room and Odin to bring clarity and wisdom to every heart and mind, and I would imagine a wind blowing the negative energy away. Thank the gods it seemed to help, for my family at least. It made me think about what Eric had said, that my family had been one of the lucky ones in the pack. We hadn't suffered the same violence that other families had suffered as the curse twisted our emotions and disintegrated our bonds. But we had suffered, every one of us. I could still feel it resonating in the family and the pack. 7 murders. Sadness welled within me. I laid my hand on my brother's arm and squeezed gently. I want to be there, Tyr. I will be there. I just can't come tonight. I have a rehearsal tomorrow morning. He tensed, and I squeezed my fingers a little more firmly, imagining that cleansing wind blowing through us and expelling the negative feelings, just like I'd done when I was a kid. Suddenly, he huffed out a breath. Okay, I'll crash here tonight and wait for you. I know you don't like driving through the mountains when there's snow on the road, and there's still some at Wolf's Pass. My brow rose. You know about that? That you're a big frickin' scaredy wolf? Of course, it takes you 3 hours to make an hour-long drive. I don't have to be Freud to work out why. You're the granny driver who holds up everyone else on the road. Beside me, Dahlia snorted. I glared at her and she pulled her t-shirt up to cover her face. Sorry, she said, her apology smothered by the thick cotton and her muffled laughter. Don't wait, I told my brother, miffed. I'll find another way home. When I realized I was still holding his arm, I snatched my hand back and then called him another one of my favorite names from childhood, Fwyn Fisker. Dahlia burst out laughing and tugged her t-shirt down from her face. What does that mean? I bit my cheek, trying to stop myself from laughing too. I'd loved learning Old Norse when I was younger and then applying it where appropriate. And calling my brother names he didn't understand was very appropriate. Who the hell cares? Tyr said. Robbie's brow furrowed. Rotten something or other. It's on the tip of my tongue. Rotten breath? Dahlia suggested. No. Rotten vegetables? No. Rotten crotch? Oh my God, Dells, I groaned. Rotten crotch? I was 9 when I made up those words. Well, I don't know. I was just guessing. And that's where your brain went, 9-year-old me thinking up names like rotten crotch? Fish, it's rotten fish, Robbie said triumphantly. I knew it. Tyr turned to me and raised his brow. That's what you've been calling all these years, rotten fish? I shrugged. No way would I admit to anything. My brother rolled his eyes. I like rotten crotch better. No surprise there, I said. Dahlia burst out laughing again. Eric asked me to stay overnight, Robbie said. I can pick up Britta when she's done tomorrow and drive her back home. Tyr looked at him and a short silence fell. I knew they were talking privately to each other through their bond. Tyr probably wanted to know why Eric had asked him to stay. So did I. Fine, my brother finally said. He spun around and started heading for the stairs, shouting over his shoulder, just don't be late and break our mother's heart. She won't, Robbie said. I'll make sure of it. I watched Tyr until his blue head disappeared down the stairs. Then I turned to Robbie. You don't have to drive me. I'll make it eventually, or I can see if Eric can fly me in tomorrow. Maybe he's staying overnight too. He's not, Dahlia said. I'm flying home with him tonight. He has to get back to prepare. We're leaving in about an hour. It's not a big deal, Britta, Robbie said. I'm here anyway, and the Range Rover's a lot safer on those roads than your Kia. And faster, with me driving. I smacked him playfully across the stomach with the back of my hand. He let out an exaggerated oof. I don't know why I was hesitating. Maybe because I wanted to prove my brother wrong. I was so used to fighting for everything I wanted and expecting to be left out that relying on someone else made me uneasy. Like I'd be hurt if I let my guard down. But it was also Robbie. I'd be leaving soon for good, and I didn't want to get any closer to him than I was now. Sitting together in a car for a couple of hours, okay, 1 hour, would only draw us closer. And that connection we'd always had would only make it harder for me to leave when the time came. Things were changing between us. No, not changing. evolving. It was apparent to me that my wolf was always watching for him, and I was too. I wanted to be with him. And where would that lead? Nowhere. I'd still be out of the pack as soon as my wolf came through, and then Robbie would be left between two worlds, pack and non-pack. Not a comfortable place to be, but I still needed a ride. I forced myself to smile. Okay, thank you. I'll pack a bag and we can leave after my rehearsal, around 2. He nodded. I should be done by then. I wanted to ask, done with what? Instead, I bit my tongue. I just hoped it wasn't dangerous. A yawn caught me unaware, and I quickly covered my mouth to hide it. Sorry, it's been a long day. With a tired sigh, I smoothed the strands of loose hair back from my face. I think I'm going to call it a night. I have to be up early, and I still have to cash out. It had been a trying few weeks, but at least now I knew why. My wolf was coming. I can cash out for you, Dahlia said. I have some time to kill before Eric wants to leave. I can stop by tomorrow afternoon and drop off your tips. Oh, that would be amazing. Are you sure? Yes, she turned to Robbie. Can you drive her home? My eyes flew to Robbie's. Oh, no, that's not. He grabbed my hand. Shut up, Britt. Let's go. Then he tugged me behind him through the half-empty lounge. And suddenly, my wolf was back, just beneath the surface, pacing and sniffing for Robbie. He slowed at the top of the stairs to let someone else go first, and I bumped up behind him. Gods, he smelled good. A lethargy invaded my limbs. My face pressed into his shoulder, and I closed my eyes and opened my mouth to scent him better, letting the pheromones wash over my tongue. Waves of need rolled through my body. It felt like heavy, thick liquid pouring into every cell, heating them, filling them. My skin sizzled and my heartbeat thudded heavily in my ears. I was here, but not here. He stepped down, pulling away from me, and I squeezed his hand in protest. My wolf growled, a deep and throaty rumble that filled my throat. Robbie froze and turned to me. His eyes widened as they met mine. Britta. It sounded like a plea and a protest all at once. A song played around us, a favorite of mine. I closed my eyes and listened to it. The music drummed through my veins, slow and languorous. My body swayed to the sensual beat as my wolf twined through tall grass. Searching. I opened my eyes to half-mast, my lids heavy. Robbie stared at me, his wolf in his gaze, his chest rising and falling like he'd sprinted a couple of miles. Britta, he said again. This time it sounded like surrender. I closed the gap between us, moving my body against his as the music wove around us. It was almost an out-of-body experience, yet I felt more energized and grounded in my body than ever before. I love this song. Let's dance. The air gushed from his lungs. I don't know if that's a good. My wolf nipped him and he jumped. She's here, he said. I smiled, slowly, sensuously. Then I pulled him behind me. I said, let's dance, Robbie. And that's it.
Sorry, let me get everybody unmuted here real quick. Woohoo!
Yeah. I was just saying, like, I kind of got like those little reader chills that you get every once in a while at the end there. And I was like, but then you stopped and I was like, what?
Yeah.
No, keep going.
We get onto the dance floor next. And it's kind of almost an out of body experience because they're faded mates, of course, as it's always in this genre. But there's a little bit of rejected mate going on too, because he very much does not want her to stay in the pack. Not because he doesn't love her, but because she's a dancer and a beautiful, incredible dancer. And he wants her to go out and live her dream and sort of get away from the pack life. And she doesn't think she's going to be accepted anyways, because she's not a warrior. And so she's really set herself up that she's got to leave. And so she's been applying all over the world to different dance companies. So he wants to reject her, but he wants her, and she doesn't want to get him pulled into her when she's not going to make it into the pack. So they've got that tugging going between them.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. In your shift of world, do your, I'm sorry, am I allowed to ask her a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
In your shift of world, do humans and shifters know about each other, or are they isolated?
They're isolated. Okay. Yeah, I don't have, at this point, there's no humans that know about the world, and no humans that know about the whole Norse god side of it, the Norse mythology side, I should say. That's I've mixed in with the werewolf. Well, not that they like the term werewolf, but the werewolf side mixed in with the Norse mythology side.
Okay.
But I've read some that have that, and I quite love that too.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what is most fascinating about, you know, writing fantasy or paranormal or something like that, where you get to create your own world and the rules, and and everybody's just a little bit different, which makes it just so unique and so much fun. So
it is fun. Yeah.
And it was fun to be able to take the myths as a springboard to creating that world. And some things are how it's in the myths, and then a lot of things are very, very different. I was trying to keep that mythological primal. You know, if you read the myth, whatever, in whatever culture it is, some of them are, you know, very, like I said, very primal and very, the creation myths can be really, I don't know which one it was, but the one of the gods was born out of the top of another god's head. So that's kind of stuff is what I was trying to bring forth. And somehow this creation myths and stuff that I have in mind.
Okay.
So it's interesting because, you know, you go from historical, which is heavy, heavy research, and, you know, instead of jumping into something where you don't have to do a lot of taxing research, you go into paranormal, but yet you want to base it all on Norse mythology and everything. So you also were doing heavy, heavy research. So
that's I certainly read all the myths. They have a few texts that are very specific to the time that were, you know, I don't know, thousands, but hundreds and hundreds of years old, that are documenting a lot of the myths. They call them the poetic. So you read all of those, and then it's just and I guess that's inspiration, right? The other question earlier was about inspiration. It's where your imagining is jumping off from there to what you're creating.
Right.
And the mix of, you know, it's just so fun because I've given the females magic. So they're not as, they're female warriors as well. My character Britta chose not to be one, but, you know, but she's coming into her magic. So that probably didn't come through in this, but not only is her wolf coming up, but also her magic will be coming up, and every woman has different magic. So that's fun to play with as the series goes on.
Yes. I love it when they're magic. So
yeah. And the men don't have magic. They're just, you know, wolves. Yay.
Magic is for girls. They don't need magic.
They have their brute strength. They're good.
Exactly.
All right. So we do have a couple of questions. We got two actually. So it's perfect. Who is your favorite author?
Well, I've mentioned Julie Garwood before. She's passed now, but really for historical, that was who I read, and I just loved her books. And she hasn't written any historicals, or hadn't written any by the time I even started to read them. I think she'd moved into another genre, but I love her. And then in terms of paranormal, there's a couple that I love and have held true for me over the years. Like some of them I read when I was younger, and you go back 20 years later and you're like, yeah, that just doesn't cut it. That's just not where I am. Mel Jean Brooke, I don't know if you've ever read any. She had a series called the Guardian series, and then which was paranormal. And then she went into steampunk. She's done a bunch in steampunk. And then she created a new pen name, Mila Vane, and she went into fantasy romance, and it's barbarian romance. And she could write anything, and I would read it because she's just such a fantastic writer. She's awesome. So I love her. And then the usual, Nalini Singh, everybody loves her. Karen Marie Moaning. She had a Fever series and a Highlander series. I read all of her Highlander books before the Fever series, and she was great at going back and forth between those genres. Cressley Cole. I mentioned Christine Feehan. I don't read her anymore, but certainly she was the very first paranormal book I read that, you know, struck my imagination. And all of a sudden there was my love of fantasy and my love of romance, you know, that came together with paranormal. Mm-hmm.
See, I didn't pick one.
Oh, sorry.
It's hard. Because I can't pick one either. The list is exceptionally long. I have a lot of authors that are, I call them my one clicks. It doesn't matter what they write, I'm going to buy it. But if you go on in historicals, now my top in historicals is Beverly Jenkins. I love Judy Garwood. I do have quite a few of Judy Garwood's and some Jude Devereaux's over there on my shelf. But yeah, Beverly Jenkins is my, because she calls it edutainment, because you mm-hmm. get a little education and you get entertained by the book, and I love that. So it was always wonderful to read those books.
I'm a big historical person. She's one of my favorites too.
Yeah. That is my jam. Until I read my library just like out of all of the books, and I had to shift to something else. So, and that's not just hers. Like literally I was every historical romance, I was like, okay, I'll take that one now. Since mm-hmm. I'm not this one. And I read them out of books. And this was before, long before we started being able to have access to ebooks. Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
When we had to go to the library.
Yeah,
I used to have to buy it.
I haven't been there in a while. The pandemic kind of got me out of going, but I was a regular library person even with the advent of having access to ebooks. I still go to the library. So I have just there's just too many. I know.
There's too many.
There's too many because it depends on my mood who my favorite is today.
Mm-hmm. So. We got one more, and our Instagram just clicked off. I just saw that. It's like, you've been over an hour, so we're done here. So we'll just do this one last question, the bonus question for all the other platforms that aren't Instagram. Oh, wait. Okay. Wait, I didn't. Okay. I almost clicked on a different one. So sorry. What do you find most challenging in writing a book?
I would say it's not the ideas. I can go days where, I love creating a writing schedule. I love that. There's something in my personality that loves sitting down and creating a schedule and finding it all come together and creating a path. But that's the fun part. And then the following through just, doesn't really work out so much. But I would say getting into the momentum of actually writing. Once I'm in that momentum of writing, then I can keep going. But sometimes those first 30,000 words can be really start and stop. And I think you're still sort of trying, if my brain knows that I haven't done something correct in the previous 30,000. I always find I stop at 30K and I'm usually going back and revising and trying to figure it out. And then 36,000 words, I'm starting to find my momentum. And then by 40 or 50, I'm writing every day at that point and I'm going forward. But it can be a real struggle to keep sort of pulling myself back and getting going. So the start, it's hard to start.
The finish for me. I didn't think I was one of those people who could write multiple books at one time, but I have about five whips probably. Like that has a little bit of something written on it. I have, because I write my draft pick serial vella, I write on that once a week, and then I have whatever story I'm writing that I'll publish. It's usually a novel. I don't do too many novellas. This one is just shy of novel length, but usually I'm more of a novel. I'm more of an 80 to 100K kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But so it's the finishing, because the characters, and especially when you have readers that are reading your stuff and they're reading on the Patreon and they don't want it to end, but you're like, we have to end this book, right? So, that is one of the things that you just, the end, getting it to the end. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Cause every now and again, I'm reading and I'm like, I'm closer to the end of this book than I thought I was. My writing was like, yeah, I know you're right there on the end. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm at the end. So
are you a canster then?
So I used to try to plot, like write outlines and all that stuff. And the characters think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now I just, when I get started, I just open up a document. I put the title at the top and I write down everything the characters give me about who they are as individuals. And I've learned some tools from my writing retreat. So I do interview them to find out who they are and answer the interview questions. And I do that maybe for half a day or a day. It depends on how much information they give me. And then I'll start writing.
Yeah.
After they tell me who they are and we go through the interview process and I find out who are these people, then I start writing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of in there anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting because I don't do the interviews, but very similarly, the very first thing I do when I start writing a book is I always write down what I know so far. And I actually title it What I Know So Far, because it's been percolating in your head for quite a while. And I just go no holds barred and just write down everything that I know. And as I'm doing it, things start to evolve and character things and story things and then trying to shape it up. That's where the hard part comes in.
Right. Yep.
So, and that's the thing. And that because I do firmly believe I'm not in charge of any of this stuff because there's usually a subplot in there and I'll get to a point. I'm like, they didn't tell me anything. I had no idea.
Isn't that fun though? When you surprise yourself,
right?
That's the best part. Those are the moments I live for because you know, you'll, like you said, Dari, you'll be writing along and all of a sudden, you know, somebody will show up and it's like, what? They're not part of this story. Where did they come from? And then they, you know, bring something in. I'm like, what? And then you just keep writing because you want to find out what happens.
Right. Yeah. Why are you here? And then like four or five chapters later, oh, that's why you're here.
Right. Right. You have a purpose.
I think it's very interesting the part that our subconscious plays in our writing because, you know, like I'm like you, I have tried to plot. And I mean, I normally know, you know, at least my like, you know, the big like posts, the
Your turning points.
Right. The big turning points and stuff. But the path in between them is my discovery and that's my fun. And it's so much fun when you surprise yourself. And then you realize that, that thing that your subconscious, like you just like put in somewhere. I'm like, oh, that's why she had this necklace from her grandmother, you know, or whatever, you know, it's just, I love it when we surprise ourselves. Well, we are over per the usual. So we are going to wrap up for tonight. I know both Dari and Madeline, you have a giveaway that we have posted on the Romance Happy Hour Facebook page. Dari, you are giving away
this book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I was sure exactly which book. So I just
cover
of one of your books, but it is that book.
Yes.
Great. And then Madeline, we've got a gift card and of that book.
We'll do the an e-copy of the Wolf's Kiss probably through Book Funnel, and then I'll do an Amazon $10.
Great. And we've got
I'm sorry, so the paperback US, and if it's then ebook if it's non-US. So.
Yep. I think we have that on the Facebook page, but we will leave that open through Sunday. So anyone who is listening to the replay or watching this afterwards has a chance to get over there and get in. And then why don't you tell us just real quick before we wrap up, where is the best place for people to connect with you? Where do you spend most of your time on social media?
Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. That's where I spend most time. That's the easiest place to connect with me. So.
Yeah, I would say I am not on social media a ton anymore. That's changed. But Facebook is where I am the most. I usually will post, if I post something on Facebook, I will often post it on Instagram as well. Okay. Twitter a little bit, but you know, I don't think a lot of readers are on Twitter anymore.
I'm getting a little more active on Threads. So I'm trying on Threads. Some recent things have allowed it to blow up. So there are more people over there now. So
yes. yes. For those of us who have been watching all the action on Threads, there are a lot of new people over on Threads as of the last week.
There's half a day gone.
Yes, exactly.
Those Threads.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for being with us. We really appreciate it. We enjoyed hearing both of you read from your work, and congratulations on your upcoming release, Dari. And Madeline, we look forward to seeing what's coming from you next. Anything else to add, Dawn? Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, we will be back in May. I can't even believe it's already May already. We'll be back the second Thursday in May. And I think that's it. So yeah, we'll catch up with you next time. Thanks for being with us. And thanks for everybody who joined us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. for joining us for this week's episode of Romance Happy Hour. To find out who's coming on next or catch up on the video episodes, visit our website at romancehappyhour.com.
Don't forget, you can always join us live on the second and fourth Thursday of each month on the Romance Happy Hour Facebook page.
To connect with Dawn or me, check the show notes for our contact info.
We'll see you next time. Cheers!
Cheers!